Welcome to Startosphere, the second season of Talk Energy with Yes Europe, Europe's largest energy NGO for young professionals and students. Yes Europe. In each episode, we talk to founders of energy and sustainability startups that have received investment that shows strong potential in becoming a future leader in the energy industry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Talk Energy with Yes Europe. And I'm Ronnie, your host at Knowledge Sharing from Yes Europe. And today we are honored to have Martin, CEO and co-founder of Craftblock. Martin, do you want to give a real quick elevator pitch about yourself?
Well, thanks a lot, Ronnie. Thanks for having me in this podcast. It's really cool for me. So, elevator pitch to myself. In the core, I'm a quite curious person. I've always been a curious person, and probably that's why I studied chemistry, let's say, in my former life. I also took a PhD in nanotechnology because I was interested in that topic and see what things can be changed like using those technologies. Based on this, just on a professional side, I passed a couple of different jobs also in research institutes, so being head of ceramics, led a couple of research projects also for the European Union, and joined a couple of companies at latest stage. I was somewhere between the interface of materials development and sales of special high-tech ceramics to steel and glass industry. In my private life, yeah, I think I'm like everybody. I love sports because it frees the mind and it sets you to a nice zero at the end. I love literature, especially scientific literature from, let's say, the 16th, 17th century, because they were quite advanced and had a couple of nice introductions. Yeah, more or less, that's me.
So you had such a rich experience in different fields. What have led you to found Craftblock?
Yeah, that's a long story. I try to make it short because it was not, let's say, a kind of planned funding of Craftblock. As I said, I have been active in high temperature industries like steel, ceramics industry, glass industry. So there was always a connection to temperature, to energy anyway. And during my time over there, I've seen a lot of energy waste. So if you do a cladding for an oven, you see how much energy is just passing by the flue gas stream, right? But I was not thinking about funding a company at that point in time. And in the mid of the 2000s, I saw a TV report about a concrete storage. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool because it stores thermal energy, it's cheap, you can cast it in each form you would ever like to, and it's available worldwide, but why are they limited to 500 degrees C? So if you are active in ceramic or in the glass industry, 500 degrees C is warm up temperature, it's not high temperature. So I just got curious and called the developers and asked, why do you stick at 500 degrees C? Why not better? Why not the broader temperature range? And that's when I started thinking about alternatives to concrete. It was just kind of scientific challenge. And at one point in time, let's say the experience of my industrial doings matched my personal experience in doing a kind of private research on how to improve a concrete storage. And then the idea came up, maybe it could be a very good idea to build a decarbonizing technology for different industries. Yeah, that's more or less how it started.
And could you be a little bit more specific on, you know, why a higher temperature would be better for energy storage and exactly what the solution would look like? You know, it's a Craftblock. So what's in the block?
Yeah. So why is it interesting, or why is it more interesting? If you are able to deliver and even operate a high temperature energy storage, you can cover much more applications than you can do with a typical thermal energy storage. So if you store, like we do at maximum, it's just a systems limit, it's not the materials limit, and maybe we should elaborate on this also a bit. If it's at 1300 degrees C, you can think about things like producing electricity with a steam turbine or even a mixture of steam and gas turbine. You can think about using it as process heat for ceramics industry, but also for glass industry, for a lot of other industries. And the third effect is the higher the temperature is, the better the heat capacity of especially sensible storage material gets, which means you can build your storage more compact, which means at the end, less steel, less insulation, less storage material, less capex, which is always interesting for a customer. And on the other hand, if the storage is more compact, you also have less OPEX because your fans, your pumps are getting much smaller than the one to comparable storages. But that's the big issue with high temperature energy storage. You could even go a little bit higher. So I said systems temperature. What does it mean? It's just the maximum temperature the whole storage can take, the whole storage system can operate with. We set it to 1,300 QC because it covers most of the applications that we had in mind from the company. From a materials point of view, we developed our own storage material. We could even go higher to 1,500, 1,600, 1,700 degrees C. So for example, use cases in technical ceramics or use cases in steel industry, thinking about blast furnaces. It's possible, but it's just a very small portion of the market share. So covering nearly 95% of the market by 1,300 degrees C solution.
And you mentioned about the use cases, which is very important. So what are, say, some of the top use cases for KraftBlock, and you know, how different do these use cases differ, and what kind of challenge would those differences pose to your solution?
Okay, now I think we need another two hours at the end. So maybe one very special thing about our thermal storage. We call this storage a multifunctional high temperature energy storage system. So sounds very complex, but it's simple. We use always the same storage. So independently, whether we serve the customer with 100 degrees C or we just discharge 800 degrees C, we use always the same storage. We use the same storage even if we charge it by a flue gas or we charge it directly by electricity using a power to heat system. So the storage is always the same. Same for the discharging. You store it, for example, 800 degrees C and deliver 560 to a steam turbine, or you deliver 300 for a drying process in the ceramics industry, or 120 degrees C to a district heating system. Storage is the same. And that's why the use cases are very different, because you can decide how do you charge, how do you discharge. And this enables us to cover a broad range of use cases. We actually started after founding the company in a thing we call waste heat recycling. So we take a look to steel industry, glass industry, ceramics industry, cement industry, where you operate furnaces, where you operate kilns. And obviously, directly behind those furnaces, you do have more or less the same temperature than inside of the furnace, right? And usually, this temperature or this temperature profile is cooled down by adding ambient air so that you can do your waste gas purification system. And usually at this point in, of this process, people start thinking about reusing the energy. I think it's more interesting to harvest 800, 1000 degrees C, 1200 degrees C, because you are free of choice on how to use this high grade heat. That's what we call waste heat recycling. That's why we started in steel and ceramics industry. Meanwhile, we enlarge this use cases to a thing we call net zero heat system. So replacing fossil fired systems against renewable energy. For example, we do have a project with Eneco and PepsiCo in the Netherlands, where we replace a gas fired boiler against combination of green electricity, so renewables, power to heat systems, convert electricity to heat, and the heat storage. Idea is just to charge for 4 hours every day when the electricity prices are quite low, store it, and then deliver 24/7 to the application. So completely different use case, but with a huge potential to decarbonize. I mean, in the final stage of this project, we will decarbonize the production line by 98% in just one single step. And it's really great.
So that is a really good point. So if we have like different use cases, and it would differ so much, but it seems to me that we are trying to fit everything in one block at the moment. So what kind of, you know, parts would be different for different use cases, be it like the heat exchange, where like how many percentage of that block would be different from one use case to another?
Let me formulate it this way. We developed a system that we sell at the moment, which is able to minimize the product risk for the customer. What does this mean? The storage as it is today is different to the storage that it will be in 10 years or in 15 years. What does it mean? We just developed the storage as storage. There is no moving part inside, so no valve, no flap, no rotating part, nothing. We do not integrate any heat exchanger. It's just the storage material inside. So we design a charging station and a discharging system. Charging in case of net zero heat is a power to heat system, so resistance heater and a fan. Fan takes ambient air through the resistance heater, which heats it up to 800 degrees C or 1000 degrees C or even more. Then the hot air is guided into the storage. The heat storage material absorbs the heat, stores it. If we need the heat again, we reverse the process, take ambient air, go through the storage, and then possibly to a heat exchanger. It depends on the process the customer has. So in terms of Eneco PepsiCo, it's a air thermal oil heat exchanger because they need hot thermal oil in their system. It could also be a steam generator, which will be the case in the follow-up projects we are covering at the moment. So let's say roughly one third of the technology is the new thermal storage system, and the other two thirds are more or less out of the shelf or state of the art technologies. But we just combine them in a very, very smart way to be really highly efficient.
That's a really good segue into my next key question, which is a key metric that we would ask, you know, for example, any storage systems, which is round trip efficiency. Mm-hmm. So just for the block itself, you know, the heat storage itself, what's the metric look like?
So for the heat storage itself, the useful energy, the round trip efficiency for this is higher than 96%, usually 98.5%. Could be even a bit higher. Mostly taking a look on the insulation materials that we are using for this application. We calculate losses between 2.5% and 0.5% every day. Which type of insulation we use just depends on the project. So we call it CapEx projects and OPEX projects. OPEX projects usually get the better insulation because, you buy, let's say, more expensive electricity to replace gas. So every point you can get in efficiency is really worth a lot of money. So that's why we then reduce the thermal losses of the storage itself.
And you mentioned about the duration. And so what's the kind of like the most ideal duration and also the capacity in terms of the use case that we're looking at?
So ideal duration is a few hours till maximum 2 weeks. 2 weeks, but only for large scale storage. So we do not talk about, let's say, 10 megawatt hour storage. We talk more about like 500 megawatt hour, 1 gigawatt hour storage capacity. Then it's absolutely fine also in terms of economics. Storage capacities. Yeah. The sentence I love most is it depends. At the end, it depends strongly what the customer needs. So we designed our storage in 10-foot, 20-foot, 40-foot containers, so typical transport containers. And at 1,000 degrees C, you store roughly 10 to 12 megawatt hours in a 20-foot container.
I see. And then I want to move a little bit about the next important topic about, you know, energy storage systems, because many people would compare, you know, what we are proposing here with some of the existing solution, like even with battery storage or capacitor, like supercapacitor, or even some say compressed air storage as well. One key metric is cost economics. So we have all those technology, but how does the cost, you know, compare with some of the existing technology?
Again, it depends. It depends on what we are talking about. So if you're talking about using a thermal energy storage as storage for electricity, it's completely different than using it as heat or heat utilization project. Mostly because the bottleneck in the efficiency to produce electricity, again, is the turbine or the generator. So if I'm able to use the steam turbine, the best one that's available, the efficiency is something like 40-45%. If I use an ORC, the efficiency is somewhere between 5-10%, so quite worse. But on the other hand, it's just a large Excel sheet you need for this. A thermal storage in combination with a steam turbine is a kind of mini power plant, and that's designed for a lifetime of 30, 40, 50 years, right? And in that time, you usually have to replace, for example, a lithium ion system by two or three times. So at the end, even the capex of the lithium ion system is much higher than the total capex of thermal storage and generation unit over the lifetime. And this at the end, even if the efficiency is worse, results in the much better levelized costs of storage than compared to the lithium system. So it's just a matter of the time frame. If we speak about thermal energy, and there's, I just can recommend the McKinsey Elders report for thermal energy systems, which just was published, I think, two weeks ago. You can find it on their website. There they're exactly comparing a system like we offer, net zero heat, so converting electricity to heat, store the heat, and then generate steam, to a couple of other options like hydrogen, like battery storage plus direct steam transformation by electric boilers and a couple of other technologies. And it showed out during this benchmarking that the combination that we offer is the cheapest. Anyway, it was something like 25 euro per megawatt hour of heat that's delivered from the system. So the economics are very good.
Okay. And my last question on the kind of like the technical side, which is it's designed to be a block. So it gives people the impression that it can be added up, like, you know, a bunch of batteries. So what kind of advantage does this block design give us?
As you said it, we can add different modules to large-scale storages. So what is the special thing for Kraftblock? We pre-designed a couple of modules, which you can use like Lego bricks. So if you want to have a large building, you just add, don't know, 10, 20, 100 of those blocks together to a large-scale system, even with a technical trick, because we do not need any pipes or ducts or something like that to connect those blocks, which means you minimize the losses, you increase the efficiency, and you even are able to tailor the charging and discharging capacities of those blocks. This is one advantage. The other advantage that's really highly rated by our customers is the flexibility. Means you talk to a customer and he has a storage demand, let's assume 500 megawatt hours. Today, you keep on talking and ask, okay, what would your plant look like in 10 years? How would you do your transition to renewable energies? What would it mean for the thermal storage capacity you need? So we can talk to the future already today and take into account the increase of storage capacity into the future. So the basic system that is installed on the customer side is able to be extended by another modules for the next stage the customer has in mind. So you have a really huge flexibility just using the same system.
That makes sense. And now I would like to share our questions more towards kind of like the commercial or business side. So I read on your website that you recently had a collaboration project with PepsiCo.
Yeah.
So could you describe a little bit more detail about that project, and how does this project help you scale up your business?
So first of all, the PepsiCo project is, let's say, for us a new type of project because it's in the food industry. As I said before, we started in, let's say, the heavy industries like steel industry, completely different. The other point is it's really a net zero heat system. So PepsiCo tries, and they do really have high ESG goals that they set for themselves, which means not only to take a look on scope 2, scope 3 ESG goals or sustainability goals, decarbonizing goals, but also to the one and two goals, which means decarbonize their own systems. And if you want to fry, and this is the example from the first plant we cover for PepsiCo, frying Lay's potato chips. I mean, to heat the frying fat, you need somehow thermal energy, and that's usually done by gas. So the only thing you have to do to decarbonize this step is to replace the gas. And that's exactly the process we are doing by Eneco, PepsiCo in this project. Means replacing a gas boiler in the final stage. It will be really a 22 megawatt system that's replaced by renewable electricity, converted by a power to heat system and thermal storage. Thermal storage you need anyway to buffer the fluctuating energies. But on the other hand, I already said, they try to charge only at those points in time when the electricity is cheap. So there's even less time over the day to charge the whole storage system. So you nearly need a reliable system with a good capacity that's able to deliver 24/7 through the production plant. And that's how we designed the system. So it's not one large scale storage over there, because you could charge or you could discharge it. We designed 5 separate storage modules. So each could run autonomously, but you can combine the operation of all 5 to have a 24/7 operation, even under worst conditions. And that's a very, very special, special thing for this project.
Just being the critic here, would people call this overcapacity?
No. No, it's really not overcapacity. It's designed exactly for the demand that the PepsiCo plant has, which means what we are usually doing if we go into a project, the first days we just spend doing data analytics. So taking the inbound data, taking the discharge data, doing a lot of statistical analytics. So when is the peak? How often is the peak every year? What's the time frame for this peak? Should it be covered by the system or even not? And after this, we come up with the first concept. And this first concept is quite close to reality. So we try not to build an overcapacity. It doesn't make any sense. Also from economics point of view. That's the advantage of the system we offer. As I said, 10 foot, 20 foot, 40 foot containers. You can build the capacity exactly to that point the customer needs it. And that's what we did also in this project.
What is the then the key challenge for you to scale up the business?
What is the key challenge? The key challenge for us is at the end that we have too many options for the customer. So we have to cut it down and focus on a special application. That's what we are doing right now. So having really good chance to do this together with PepsiCo, but also with Eneco, which has a couple of other ideas in their mind, what customers they could serve with this option. So this focusing was really, I would not say it was hard to do, but there are so many options that thermal storage systems offer to various industries that you just try this point, that point, try to figure out which is the best point you can have your intro into the market. And this net zero heat system especially offers us the chance to have, let's say, the same charging, the same storage module, but just do a variation in the discharging modules to fit other industries like chemical industry, mining industry. So now we designed a standardized module that can be used about a couple of industries. And that was for us internally, the main issue that we had to solve. And we did it.
Nice. So finally, I want to move our topic to the startup journey itself. So I noticed that Kraftblock was first founded almost 80 years ago in 2014. Yeah. So what took so long? You know, what has been happening in the past 8 years?
A lot of things have been happening. Excellent question. So we are not a software startup. We are a hardware startup. And developing hardware, and I do not speak about even a chip, costs a lot of time, but developing a kind of mini power plant costs even more time. So we developed the storage material, we developed the storage itself, the storage system, the flexibility, the modularity of the system, which means also the point to easily scale the whole system. This takes a lot of time. This takes a lot of prototypes, pilots, even a lot of money before you have a system that you can approach the customer with and say, okay, I do have a great solution for you. Would you like to test it? That's much more easy with the software. I mean, you build it, you release a first application with, let's say, 80% and just improve it by releasing a couple of updates and upgrades. No chance with a hardware system. The hardware has to work to 100% from the very beginning in the first customer project. In order to do this, just to give you an imagination, our storage material, I said we designed it by ourselves because typical storage materials do have the issue, especially the sensible ones, they do have good capacity and worse conductivity. But to follow a technical process, you have to also have a good conductivity without losing capacity. So we designed, let's say, in a chemical way, in the material, use really hard material science behind. And we have, of course, to test it under different conditions and see how many cycles could this material last, which is an indicator for the duration of the whole storage life at the end. So we did 15,000 cycles, charging and discharging of this material. And even those cycles took us 2.5 years till we finished it. So only 2.5 years materials testing. Then you have the systems testing, you have the insulation, the storage vessel, the combination, the flanges, security, fulfilling all the norms. Costs enormous time enormous amount of time. At the end, we have been 2 years faster than planned. So yes, it was a long journey, but to develop a kind of mini power plant, it also was fast.
That's very impressive though, to have such a long plan. But what didn't go as planned, like during this 8-year process?
What didn't go as planned is the acquisition of the customers. So we thought at the beginning it would be easier if you offer really a solution that they would need. We didn't expect, maybe because we started our business in Germany, don't know if it was Germany, if it could be easier in the US, for example. But the German companies were very critical to the system. So they were looking for risks and more risks and even more risks. So till we get the first customer, it took quite a long time. But on the other hand, for us, even for the pilot phase, it was important that the customer commits himself to this project by paying for the pilot. So there are a lot of other startups in our place, in our industry, that build pilots on their own costs. So they have a chance to attach it to the customer system, but they pay for the pilots themselves. And we wanted to have the commitment from the market and obviously from the customer. And this took more than 1.5 years longer than expected.
And what kind of lessons have you learned, not just from the customer acquisition, but also overall the startup building process?
I think one of the main lessons we have learned, I have learned, is to be patient. To be consistent, but patient, and always telling the same story, convincing the customer, taking them to your side, showing the technology, building trust, which is very, very important, especially with such a young technology. The other point, especially for hardware-based startups, is do fundraising if you are able to do it, because you're for hardware, you never can have enough money to test, to build pilots, to do your characterization and all this stuff. So it's also a very important point. And the third one is do not stick at one market. Try to diversify, try to be there where the market are moving. In our case, if the market is not moving in Germany, go somewhere else and make this happen in this part of the world.
That's a great point, which leads to my next question. So in the future, say in 5 years, what markets, what use cases, and what capacity, what scale will Craftblock look like?
Wow, yeah, I love this question. If I take a look to my business plan, I could give a figure, of course. What markets? So we are active outside Germany. The project PepsiCo, Eneco, is in the Netherlands. We do have another project with one of the biggest steel manufacturers in India. So it's in India directly. We are close to another project in Italy and a fourth one in Australia. So we are already kind of internationalizing our systems. Maybe already answering a question that might come up. Of course, we do it not alone, because doing it with a small team is nearly impossible. But we do have local partners on those continents and on site to get the business done. I think in the next 5 years, especially in Europe, the net zero heat systems are replacing especially gas and coal against renewable energies will be one of the largest drivers. And we will probably have a very strong footprint in food industry, pulp and paper industry, chemical industry, because there we can use exactly the same system that we designed right now. In terms of capacity, yeah, good question. Probably in the next 5 years, in the lower three digit gigawatt hour range.
That sounds very optimistic. I think from a person who believes in energy transition, so I really look forward to seeing that happening. And with that, I would like to ask you one last question for the episode, which is, most of our audience are young energy professionals and some are students. So what's your kind of like career advice or even entrepreneur advice to those young folks?
I think what is very two things in my opinion that are very important is stay curious, try not to stick on those things you learned, because there's even more to discover, to enlarge your mind, extend your thinking. That's very important. And what's nearly as important as this, in my opinion, is build your network. Try to get so many people to know that you can. Try to have an exchange. Try to discuss, have ideas, because this will take you to the next step. So extending your views on different topics, independently whether it's politics or technology.
That's so fascinating. I would like to ask a small follow-up question, but related to this one. What does the next rock star team member that Kraftblock is looking for?
Next rockstar team member is a good question. There are two. At the moment, we are actively looking for a COO and a CCO. So COO really is the it's not my shadow, but that's the guy. It's the American CEO who should run the daily business, who should be able to scale an existing business case. So just to compare Tim Cook is great. So just having the iPhone, for example, but being able to increase the margin, being able to increase the revenues, that's a person we are looking for actively.
All right. Thank you very much. So that's the end of the episode.
Great. Thanks a lot.
All right.